And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, Brian, so I started JJ Delaney's tribute show with a quote from Brian Cody, a very complimentary one, and I'm going to start this one with a quote from Jimmy Barry Murphy, who we're going to talk to later on the show. I've been watching hurling for the past 35 years or so, and I can say without hesitation, I have never seen better than Brian Corcoran. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually seen that quote from Jimmy before, and, you know, I've always had great respect for Jimmy, and, you know, it's nice to get a compliment like that from someone like Jimmy Barry Murphy. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that, I think he said this after the 1999 season, you were player of the year and man of the match in the All-Ireland final.
Not sure when he said it, but that could be the case, yeah.
So JJ Delaney was a late bloomer, right? So just going back at his show, you definitely weren't a late bloomer, because you played 4 years at minor level for the Cork hurling team, and you played 3 for the football team, which is incredible in itself. You were in midfield at the age of 15 and won an All-Ireland Minor Hurling Championship.
Yeah, we didn't actually win. We were beaten by Kilkenny in the final that year. That was 1988, a long time ago now. And that was a great Kilkenny team. It was Pat O'Neill and DJ Carey, Adrian Ronan, and Charlie Carter. So, you know, names that went on to be very successful at senior level after. But yeah, my introduction to the inter-county scene was that minor team in 1988. You know, I was very young at 15, but, you know, it was kind of big for my age, and obviously wasn't as strong as an 18-year-old, but I was able to kind of manage and survive.
Yeah, but it'd be unusual for Cork to play a 15-year-old at minor, though.
Yeah, it was unusual. Not sure, you know, how often it's happened, but to be very honest, I mean, at the time, I didn't think I was ready for it. I was playing with Midland CBS. We had won the Harty Cup that year, and I was actually playing cornerback. I got asked to go for a trial, and I actually turned down the trial because I just thought I was too young. And then I actually went to the first round. Cork played Waterford down in Middleton, and my two teammates, Timmy Keller and John Dillon, playing on it. So I went to watch, and then I got a call back for another kind of trial game the week before the month's final against Tipperary, and again I reluctantly went, you know, did okay in the game, and we played Middleton in the minor hurling championship, and I did well that night against, there was 6 or 7 of the Midland team on the minor team, on the Cork minor team. So I got asked to go play a trial game. That went okay. And then to my shock, it was on the Thursday night, I was told I was playing midfield the following Sunday. And that was my kind of first game as, you know, in a stadium with a full crowd scenario. And it was certainly nerve-wracking, but you know, I was lucky to be part of a core team. I remember I was actually marking Michael Ryan, you know, from Tipperary in that game at midfield, and you know, we got a few goals and won that game, and that was kind of the start of it. I was lucky to be part of a good team, and you know, I missed all of the pre-season stuff, and literally just came on the panel a week before the month's final and ended up in the team. It was not sure how it happened or why it happened, but you know, it happened, and it was the start of my career, really.
Start of a fair role. Like, I mean, what I'm not sure if you can remember at this stage, but a 15-year-old sleeping the night before playing in Croke Park in an All-Ireland final, like, I mean, I'd say you didn't sleep a wink.
Yeah, it was... I would say the Munster final actually was my first big game, and I remember going into the dressing room physically shaking, and you know, I'm generally not nervous, and you know, later in years I wouldn't have been nervous like that, but at that day. I remember wondering how I was actually going to hold a hurley run out in the field. But again, once you get out there and once the game starts, you kind of get into it. The All-Ireland final was kind of, you know, the first time going up to Dublin the night before, staying in a hotel. And, you know, I'm pretty sure I didn't sleep much that night from nerves as well. But it was a fantastic experience. Obviously, that was the old Croke Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great to have played in the old and new Croke Park. So, yeah, it was great times, long time ago. But unfortunately, you know, you mentioned it, four years hurling, we didn't actually win a minor All-Ireland, ended up losing two finals. We lost in 88 to Kilkenny. We got annihilated by Clare in the Munster Championship in 89. In 90, we drew Kilkenny in the first game, first All-Ireland final, and we lost the replay. And 91, then we lost in Munster to Tipperary. So 4 years without winning a medal, and you know, the two final defeats came against Kilkenny, which, you know, would against some of the players that obviously would meet in years later at senior level as well. So it was a good learning, and it definitely gave me, you know, losing those games and those finals definitely gave me hunger for later years.
So you mentioned 1991, that was your last year at minor, and I was reading that in 1991, between your club, between under 21 hurling, under 21 football, minor hurling, minor football, you were playing with 13 teams into one season. Like, you must have been getting pulled in all directions.
Yeah, and I mean, there was, you know, college teams as well, you know, between kind of freshers and the senior teams in college. But it was different times where you just got on with it, and, you know, playing three or four games a week, or playing two games in a day, or, you know, two games in a weekend was just kind of the norm. Wouldn't recommend it these days, but you know, at the time I didn't kind of see anything wrong with it. I loved doing it, and I enjoyed doing it. But, you know, in hindsight, it probably did have an impact. And, you know, people talk about burnout, and you know, I don't think I physically burnt out, but mentally it was kind of wearying. And at the end of the day, when it comes to, you know, you can't train with 14 teams all at once. So sometimes you're going out to play a game with a team that you haven't really trained with, and that can be challenging as well. Or you're taking the place of somebody who's been training all along. So that, you know, it's can be an awkward situation. And sometimes as well, looking back on it, I mean, the managers didn't always obviously every manager is kind of looking out for their own team. So managing the managers was a challenge as well. And you know, I learned very early on that you know, I kind of had to stand up for myself. And you know, if there was a training session where I was tired, or if I wasn't feeling well, you know, I had to kind of take a stance and make sure that I wasn't kind of killing myself. Because you know, back then, you know, a lot of the managers' attitude was, you know, no pain, no gain, and if you don't train hard, you don't get to play. And you know, some managers would expect you to train with your college during the day and go train with the senior team that evening. And you know, that's not necessarily wasn't sustainable. So you know, I had to kind of take a strong stance early on, where, you know, to try and look after myself. And that wasn't always popular. But, you know, I felt that I needed to do that at times.
Right, okay. Like, I mean, you talk to some players as they're younger and they go up to the field with a bag of slitters or a bag of balls. I suppose you wouldn't have even had time to do that, because you were playing with two or three different age groups in hurling and in football. Like, you were honing all your skills in matches. So I suppose in that way, there was would have been a rapid improvement in the standard of your play, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose back in my teenage years, I mean, you know, I live next door to the Aaron's Own pitch. That's basically what I did. You kind of brought the hurley to school, you know, lunch breaks you were playing, after school you were playing, you know, even in the evenings when you didn't have games with my friends, we'd be we'd be out on the road hitting balls, or, you know, there was an old house over the road with kind of a, you know, broken windows and things like that, and we'd be hitting the ball through the windows for target practice. So even when I wasn't in games, I always had a hurley in my hand. So even when we were out socially talking, we were kind of poking a ball around. So that kind of helped to hone the skills as well. We didn't see it as training. It was just what we loved. And you know, if we walked to the shop a mile down the road, we'd hit the ball down in front of us and do the puck fodder down the road before the puck fodder even existed. So it was just a kind of a labor of love, and that's all I knew, really.
Yeah, is that happening as a matter of interest in Cork at the moment? Do children carry hurdles everywhere with them?
You don't really see it, to be honest. In fact, I think it's probably a long time since I've seen it. You know, if I walk to the shop now, you see guys walking against you throwing a rugby ball or kicking a soccer ball up the road, but you rarely see guys with hurleys on the road. And you know, there's obviously so much choice that young people have these days. Back in my day, we didn't have the choice. It was, you know, as I say, I lived next door to the GA pitch, so it was hurling and football, and that was it.
Yeah, so 1992, you came straight out of minor and went into the senior team, and you ended up winning Player of the Year. Jesus, this was some trajectory for your career, wasn't it? You cleaned out Pat Fox, who had been Player of the Year the previous year. You were given free taking duties. Like, I mean, there was a lot being thrown on you at a young age.
Yeah. I suppose the previous year, I kind of got an introduction to it because I was obviously minor the previous year, and we'd been beaten in the minor hurling championship, and Father O'Brien, or Kenan O'Brien at the time, was the senior coach, and he asked me to come out to the senior team in 91, just after the minor championship. So I kind of got exposure to the whole setup in 91 as sitting on the bench. And I remember being down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh for the Cork tip game, sitting on the bench, and at that time he was looking at me as a centre forward. So, you know, if I was going to play or if I was going to come on, I was going to be coming on at centre forward. And I remember sitting in the bench that day thinking, I'm not ready for this. You know, I was still only just turned 18, and the intensity of the game, and, you know, just the, you know, a lot of the names that were out there, I didn't think I was ready. You know, luckily for me, in hindsight, I didn't get brought on. And you know, I missed that was the drawn game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and I missed the replay because it clashed with the Munster football final that year. So I was playing in the minor football final. So I missed the replay in Cork, Tipi Cork, in that famous game up in Thurles. Yeah. So that kind of gave me an introduction to the whole setup in 91. And then back in those days, you played three rounds of the league before Christmas. So I kind of played those games at the back end of 91.
Right.
And then I kind of played all the league at the start of 92 as a cornerback. I played a couple of rounds half forward, and then they moved me back cornerback. So by the time championship came around, I had kind of almost established myself on the team. So, you know, I was a lot more confident and felt that I could fit in. You know, that game against Pat Fox, I mean, that was actually the second game. We played Kerry in the first round, I believe. So that you know, I did get an initial championship game before going into the Calder against Tip. But, you know, in reality, I had nothing to lose. I mean, Pat Fox had no clue who I was. You know, I felt the pressure was on him. There was no pressure on me as such. And you know, luckily, again, it was a very experienced Cork team. You know, that was my first game. There was no first big game, we'll say. There was no back door at the time. And we came through that game. You know, we beat Limerick in the Munster final. I think it was down in the semi-final, and all of a sudden we were in another final against Kilkenny. So it was, you know, as I say, the 91 season definitely helped being involved for that while to get me aligned with what the intensity of the senior game looked like. And by the time 92 came, even though I was only 19, you know, I felt they was ready for it at that stage.
Right, so that's your third All-Ireland final to lose to Kilkenny, so they must be starting to piss you off now at this stage.
Yeah, and the All-Ireland Colleges in 88, so we won the Harpy Cup, which is the Munster Colleges in 88, and St. Kieran's beat us in the final that year. And again, that was the Patanis, the DJs, and the Adrian Ronans. And, so yeah, Kilkenny were always kind of the nemesis as such. So yeah, you know, I always had huge respect for Kenny Hurling, and you know, if anything, it kind of forced us to raise our standards.
So you mentioned being slightly burned out, maybe not physically but mentally, and like, I mean, you retired in 2001 at 28. You were after beating Kilkenny in 99 in the All-Ireland final, and like, I mean, there's work was a factor, just being burnt out mentally, I suppose, was a factor as well.
Yeah, like back in those days, there was no back door. You know, you got one shot at it, and so we won the All Ireland in '99. In 2000, you know, we won Munster and got to the semi final, and you know, we lost to Offaly, who we'd beaten the year before, and you know, that was a game that you know, I didn't play well in, and. I remember, you know, I wasn't fit. You know, I had an ankle injury during the summer, and I wasn't fit. So, you know, I felt this that I didn't want to go to Croke Park again for a game like that without being fit. So normally during the winter, I kind of tended to take it a bit easy and get a bit lazy over the winter. But the winter 2000 into the 2001 season. Was probably one of the hardest kind of winter training seasons I put in. So coming into 2001, you know, I felt that I was fit. I was fit in January, which was, you know, rare, wasn't normally the case. And but I broke a finger in the first challenge game in January, and you know, I was out for whatever that was, 5 or 6 weeks, and then I came back, and we played. Wexford on Wexford Park in the league, broke my finger again. So
the same one.
I missed the same one. Yeah. I missed the first round of the championship against Limerick. No, I came on at half time, but I couldn't start the game because I had a splint on.
Yeah.
And we lost that game. And I remember after that game thinking, this is not worth it, because I had just put in at that stage probably 8 months of the hardest kind of training I'd put in, and got you know, one chance, season over. And around the same time as well, my mother had just been kind of diagnosed with terminal cancer. My first daughter Kate was born, so I was just really questioning, you know, the sanity of you know, putting all of this commitment and effort in to get potentially one game in the summer, or maybe not even get that game. So I remember coming out of the dressing room 2001, getting into the car, and I think we were going back to Jury's Hotel at the time. And I made my mind up in the car that I wasn't doing it again. Didn't tell anybody. But I made my mind up that day, and you know, I played the club championship that year. But when we were out of it, whatever, in August, I knew that I wasn't. That was the end of it. And it was, you could say, the years of build up of burnout, or playing all those games, or doing all that training. But ultimately, it was that kind of
that year. That's family, the injuries, yeah.
Sport balance, injuries, yeah. And what. Just wasn't worth it to me, and I wasn't enjoying it, and to be honest, I was starting to get kind of cranky on the field even, and you know, I was giving out the refs, and when that wouldn't normally be my style. So I was going out on the pitch, and you know, I just wasn't enjoying it towards the end, and because of the commitment, and because of what we're, you know, as I say, you know, when my mother was diagnosed, it kind of gives you a perspective on life as well. So I just felt at that stage it just wasn't worth it, and I wasn't enjoying it enough to put that level of effort in. So,
right, and you found yourself getting cranky on the field when in the year after the All-Ireland winner in 2001 or...
2001, yeah.
2001, right, just a frustration. And was there a frustration as well, Brian, because you were such a dominant centre-back and you were Player of the Year in 99, the teams would have stopped poking it down on top of you and would have tried to take you out of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing a club game against St Finbarrs, and Ger Cunningham was in goal for the Bars, and obviously Ger was a great goalkeeper, but there was no way he was poking a ball down the top of me. So, but I remember just being frustrated that evening because I felt I had no control over the game or over how he performed, because the ball just never came my way. And no matter what I tried to do, trying to get involved, the ball just poked it away from where it was, and that definitely got frustrated with that as well. And I suppose when I did come back, that's one of the reasons why, I kind of wanted to play up forward in the forward lane, because I wasn't at the mercy of whether the opposition were keeping the ball away from me or not. But I wanted to be a ball player. I wanted to be on the ball, and when I was playing and I wasn't getting the ball, or the ball wasn't coming my way, I was getting frustrated with that, and it wasn't good enough to me that, my obviously if I wasn't getting the ball, my man wasn't getting the ball, so my man wouldn't score. But that to me still wasn't good enough, because I wasn't enjoying it, and I wasn't getting on the ball, and wasn't getting to play the game the way I wanted to play it. So that definitely led to some frustration as well, absolutely.
Right, okay, that's, yeah, you're right. If you're not enjoying it, maybe, although you played cornerback for a while, so you must have kind of known, well, I suppose a cornerback, you hurl a bit of ball too, depending, as well.
Yeah, to be honest, I hated cornerback. I never saw myself as a cornerback. It was great to get on the team, and that was my entry point. But if I'd been told that my career was to be a cornerback for the rest of my career, I probably would have retired when I was 20.
I saw you in the All-Ireland, the football match. We did a nostalgia show on it there recently, and you're running around after Joe Brolly, and I was just thinking, geez, Brian Corcoran is not enjoying that at all. He wants to be in the half-back line.
Yeah, and to be honest, it was worse than football. Like playing cornerback in football was a nightmare. Some people might call it, being naivety or whatever, but I wanted to play the ball, and I wanted to, if I was going to beat somebody, I wanted to beat them fair and square, and I wasn't a jersey puller, and no interest in that, and if I had to resort to that, then I didn't want to play the game, and I felt that at that point a lot of the best cornerbacks in the country were used to be hanging off the corner forwards, and that just wasn't my style. I couldn't look somebody in the face after a game and shake their hand if I'd been dragging off them for the hour. So my philosophy was go out and try and beat, try and get out in front and try and beat the person. And sometimes that was easier in hurling than it was in football, because football was, slower and more deliberate. And obviously the ball was the guys out the field had more time to, we'll say, pick out the door brawlies of the world and play the ball to their advantage. And I detested, I would use that word, I detested playing in the fullback lane in football. But and how it came about was, again, I mean, I suppose from my early childhood, I was kind of big and strong for my age. So, I got kind of thrown in at centre back in those types of positions. But in 1990, in 89, when I came on the football team, I was actually full forward, corner forward. In 1990, I was centre forward. And then in 91, Eamon Ryan was the coach, and Eamon came to me and said, look, we're stuck for a full back. Would you try full back? And I'd never played full back in football. But again, I was the kind of person that, consider myself a team player, and you know, if the coach asks you, will you play somewhere, my attitude was, if that's what you need me to do, that's what I do. So I'm a back full back on that minor team, and struggled to get away from that position for years after, because you know, when it came to the senior team, I was kind of either full back or cornerback, and but I could never say I enjoyed it. You know, I always wanted to be kind of out, further out the field. But at the time, you know, Stephen O'Brien was centre back for Cork, and he was, you know, an awesome player. And, you know, so centre back position wasn't available. So it was again, take whatever position you're offered. But looking back in this, I really didn't like playing cornerback or fullback.
Yeah, I'm laughing, Brian, because I feel the exact same. I play anywhere bar cornerback. You're marking a lethal corner forward, and there is no enjoyment. If you like to get your hands on the ball, there's no enjoyment. Come here. I didn't realize. I thought when you made the comeback then and you went full forward that this was a bit of a shock move, but it wouldn't have been to you then. You obviously would have played in midfield with your club, and you would have played in the forwards at underage.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a choice in underage, I would have played in the forwards all the time. But but again, because of probably, you know, size and strength, I tended to get put in the back line.
Right.
But centre forwards would have been my kind of favourite position, you know, growing up. And I rarely got to play there. And, you know, even for Cork, I would have loved to play centre forward, but never really got the opportunity. As I say, when I came on the scene initially, Father O'Brien was looking at me as a centre forward, but within 6 months he had me back cornerback.
Yeah.
But whatever. I obviously wasn't impressing him as a centre forward.
Yeah. You must. Yeah. You must. Yeah. Whatever your sins were, he punished you anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I mean, I always wanted to play forward, but never got the opportunity. So. I did a club level, but not an inter-county level. So when I was coming back then, that was the only thing that was going to bring me back was to try playing the forward line.
You must have enjoyed those 3 years back then immensely. You know, the two All Irelands and 3 All Ireland finals in a row. But you know, playing up front and just enjoying it.
Yeah, it was great. It was kind of new lease of life, new challenge. And, you know, I'd been out for kind of nearly 3 years and literally hadn't touched a hurley during that time. I wasn't playing with my club either. So
you took a complete break,
yeah. And put on a bit of weight and got on fit and all that good stuff. You know, back in 2003, Donal O'Grady had taken over, and he rang me to know whether I'd come back, and I told him I wouldn't come back, and thanked him for the offer, but I was done and I was finished.
And what triggered you to change your mind then?
Yeah, it's funny because the Cork got to the All Ireland in 2003 against Kilkenny, and I was sitting in the upper deck of the Hogan, and I was happy to be there. I was comfortable to be there. I was, you know, sometimes it's not really until the big day when you realize, oh, have I made a mistake here? But I was quite happy sitting up in the stand, because, you know, not saying I wouldn't have liked to have been down there, but when you think of the nine months of hard work it would take to have gotten there,
yeah,
I wouldn't have swapped it. So I was happy in sitting in the stand. Cork lost the game. I went back out to City West just to give my condolences to the team. I actually parked out there and I got the bus in. So I waited for the team and, you know, I was just about to head home. So I kind of spoke to some of the players and walked out the door, and I was just about to get into my car to drive back to Cork. And Tom Barry, who was a great Corkman living in Dublin, he was the organizer of the social event that evening, and he came back out and he followed me out and he said, would you like to come into the social? And I said, like, I was wearing a jersey and I didn't have any other clothes with me, and I said, I've only got a jersey on me. And he said, oh, who cares, come on in. So he brought me in, and I actually ended up sitting with the players and kind of spent the evening with the players, and the following evening when they came back in the train, I kind of met them again and went out, and it just triggered something. So literally within 24 hours, it kind of triggered something within me in terms of, maybe there's a spark here somewhere. And after seeing 2003, I was pretty, don't know what it was, but I in my own mind, I felt Cork were going to win the All-Ireland in 2004. And then it was kind of, okay, do I want to be involved in that? And obviously there was no guarantees of even getting back on the panel and getting back on the team. There was a new excitement around there because, Setanta Halpine was on the team and there was a new style, and so that was kind of exciting. So I kind of made my own mind up that I'd start training again. I was kind of training at night in the dark, behind closed doors, didn't tell anybody. I was going to the gym and we were just running to Donal Cusack, and we were kind of training together, and there was no mention of, I never said to him that I was coming back.
Did any of the players, when you were having a few pints with them the Sunday night or the Monday, would any of them drop it to you there saying, geez, you're only 30, you're 31 next year, will you come back?
Yeah, I mean, there was a few people said it, you still have something to contribute and that kind of thing. But in my own mind, it was kind of the feeling of, is there something I can do to help? I mean, at that point, the thought of getting back on the team was kind of furthest thing from my mind. It was like, okay, can I get back on the panel and even be some form of impact sub or whatever? And I was willing to do that. And I was willing for it to fail. Because, I did have people calling to my house telling me, don't do it. You're crazy. You've been out for too long and you're too unfit and this kind of stuff. But once I put my mind to it, I worked really hard and I wasn't afraid of failure. If it blew up on my face, I was willing to accept that.
I was actually reading an article Tomás Mulcahy wrote at the time, and it was complimentary about your comeback. He was saying that you definitely have a role to play, but he was saying the game is getting faster every year, so it'll be considerably quicker than what he was used to playing in. Not too many fellas make a fist of a comeback, and you'd hope he wouldn't fall on his face. Now, that's a Cork man. And then obviously there was Diddy Cahill comments and stuff like this. Was there pressure on you that you're coming back, Brian? Or were you like you said, you're not afraid of failing?
I wouldn't have said there was pressure. It was in my mind, it was, okay, can I put the shoulder to the wheel to help the greater movement, we'll say. And if it means, just giving advice to the younger players, or just being a presence in the dressing room, or coming on as an impact sub. I was willing to do that.
Would you be happy? Would you have been happy with the internet or the impact sub, knowing that you like to enjoy it and get your hands on the ball? You know what I mean. Be involved in the game. Would mentally, were you prepared to be an impact sub, or were you saying, I won't enjoy it unless I'm starting?
I would say before I retired, I had no interest in being a sub. I wanted to be on the team, and I wouldn't have been happy if I wasn't on the team. But because I'd been out for 3 years, coming back, I again, there was no guarantee I was even going to make the panel. So the goal was to get back on the panel, and I found out afterwards. I mean, Donal O'Grady rang me again and 2004, because he knew I was back training, would I come back? And I told him I would, but I would only come back if he'd consider me as a forward. And obviously there was no guarantees, but he agreed to consider me as a forward. And I said, no matter what happens, even if, Ronan Curran gets injured, you need to see me as a forward, not as a centre back. And he agreed to that, and that was perfect. But I suppose there was a few things happened then. We'll say after I had kind of decided that I was going to try and get back, Setanta ended up leaving to go play Ozzie Rules, and Alan Brown, who'd been on the team, he retired. So all of a sudden there was a couple of positions
right.
in the football league became available.
Right, you decided you were going back before you knew Satanta was leaving. I thought pressure might have come on you then when that happened.
No, actually, to be honest, just Satanta was one of the reasons why I wanted to go back. Because, you know, I spoke to him for Native of the All-Ireland in 2003, and he was, you know, such an exciting player, and he was bringing the buzz, and, you know, I wanted to be part of it. And so I had decided to go back in my own head. I decided to go back to be involved. That was before. So I was actually disappointed when I heard Satanta wasn't going to be around. And also Alan Brown. Alan Brown was, you know, a great warrior for Cork over the years. And, you know, he decided to not play in 2004. That obviously opened up potential positions on the team. But, you know, I was disappointed to see Alan go.
Alan go. Like, I mean, you were so good in the air, and that 04-05 team weren't exactly known for getting it in too long. So obviously you had to make the most of, you know, the balls that you did get.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the, you know, that was kind of the start of the sort of the running style. And a lot of times it wasn't, you know, playing the full four line wasn't the best place to, you know, for that style sometimes. But it was all about the team, and it was all about, you know, how the team performed.
You get the you get the odd clearance off the rock anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously I was lucky to be on the team with great players, and great players that, you know, you knew had your back, and that you knew that you'd want going if you were going into battle. And that's kind of the way we saw it. We were going into battle, and you wanted guys with you who you knew had your back, and that you could rely on. And I was very fortunate to have a lot of guys, you know, across numerous teams over the years that you literally would go to war with.
So we were just after mentioning your comeback there, and the two All-Irelands that you won, but there was a time when it looked like you might not win one at all. That all changed in 1999, and your manager from that year, Jimmy Barry Murphy, joins us on the line now. How's it going, Jimmy?
Very good, Colin, thanks.
So we were talking about Brian's comeback there, and then it got me thinking of the 1990s, and he started in 1992, and it wasn't until 1999 that he made another Munster final. So, like, there must have been an awful lot of pressure on you and him coming into that 1999 season.
Well, it wasn't so much pressure on him, I suppose, on us all, because from Cork's point of view, it was a tough couple of years. And when I took over the senior team in 95, 96, after the minors, it was a very, very tough couple of years. And a learning stage for me as well, because I was very new to it, and I made an awful lot of mistakes that time, and, you know, shuffling players around and playing players in wrong positions, and including Brian. We played Brian in other positions several occasions, and we eventually, not to any stroke of genius on my behalf, we put him back centre half back where he should have been all the time. And we developed a team around Brian, really. That's the basis of what we were doing, and we saw where our strengths were, and we worked around that basis, really, and the younger players we brought in responded fantastically to Brian as their leader, really.
Right. You must have been going mad in the 90s, Brian, because, like, not even a Munster final between 92 and 99, and there's no back door, like you were mentioning. You're training all year for one match, and then you're out.
Yeah, it was very, very frustrating at the time, but, you know, that's the way it was. You know, back around that time as well, you had teams in Munster that were getting stronger. So you had the clear team coming through. You had Limerick, you know, who got the two All-Ireland finals. So it was, and obviously Tipperary hadn't gone away. So it was very, very competitive, and you got one bite at the cherry. And for a few years, it was like the annual trip to the Gaelic grounds, either playing Clare or playing Limerick, and we came out alongside of it. And you know, your season over, and that's really how I ended up playing football, because the hurdles were so early, and you kind of had summer free, and Billy Morgan came asking me to play the football. So, you know, to be involved in something. But yeah, it was a tough time for Cork hurling. I think for 4 or 5 years, we only won one round, and that was against Kerry. And you know, it was, as I say, the annual trip to Limerick, and you know, I hated the Gaelic grounds in Limerick for a few years after that.
And what are the Cork fans like in a tough period like that, Brian? Are they like, do you have to keep your head down, or are they supportive?
I mean, I think, you know, the Cork, obviously, you know, over the years there's been a lot of success, and expectations are high, and you know, there were certainly you know, a few days where you know, we kind of hit rock bottom, and you know, I think Jimmy alluded to one of them there in 1986. Against Limerick down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh was a really bad day for Cork hurling. And you know, if you told any of us that day that we'd win an All Ireland within 3 years, you know, we'd have bitten your hand off for it. And you know, I think, you know, no matter where you go, you're going to have criticism if you're not playing well, or if you're not winning. And you know, Cork fans are. Have high expectations and high standards, and you know, if you're not winning, you're going to hear about it.
I remember watching that 1996 game. Unfortunately for you, it was on television. It was on RT that day. Jimmy, your legendary status, obviously as a player, and then with the minors. Like, I mean, that must have been shell shocked, really, that day.
My status, whatever you might call it, didn't bomb proof me from the reaction after that game. I can tell, as Brian said there, as Brian alluded to there, the standard in Munster, to be fair, was exceptionally high, because Limerick were a very good team. Clare were brilliant under Gerard Lochnan, who had done an incredible job, and the belief he brought to Clare. So they were the benchmark at the time. Tipperary were just a bit under them, I think, and ourselves in Waterford were probably below that again. So when we played the National League, that was my first couple of years involved there. It was a shell shock, a real culture shock to me, how we'd fallen behind, and, you know, learning on the job. As I didn't do a very good job the first couple of years either, but I think after that shock of that defeat by Limerick, that it opened all our eyes to see what had to be done going forward, to plan our campaign. And I didn't honestly think that I would be there when we won All Ireland, because of the gulf in the standards of the other teams. But in fairness to the players, they responded fantastically, and we made that jump. And as Brian said, we wouldn't have seen ourselves being All-Ireland champions in 2 or 3 years after that. And we went on to win the National League in 98. So it wasn't overnight in 99. We had a great, good campaign in 98. And then that resulted in 99. So it was a couple of years of hard learning, but outstanding 2 years from the players' point of view, really.
Yeah, and even the 99 All-Ireland then, Brian, like, I mean, you did it the hard way. That's one of the hardest All-Irelands Cork would have won. Waterford, who were in the All-Ireland semi-final the year before, and Clare beat them in a replay in 98. We all know about Clare. Then Offaly defending All-Ireland champions in Kilkenny.
Yeah, it was a kind of tough journey. And again, from my memory, like, the first game against Waterford was probably the pressure game, because I think at that stage there was a back door if you got to the provincial final, but it wasn't at the first round. So you know, that's my memory. So I can just remember that Waterford game was a must win or a season over. And as you know, Jimmy mentioned, we'd won the league the previous year, and we actually beat Waterford in that league final. So that was a huge game for us. And you know, we got momentum there, and obviously the Munster final against Clare. Clare had beaten us in 93, 95, 97. In 97, they'd kind of, you know, beaten us pretty well. And so that was a huge game to actually get over Clare in that Munster final. And then Offaly, and in the semi-final, Offaly were the defending champions, having you know, beating Kilkenny in 98, and that was a huge win for us. And then obviously, you know, facing Kilkenny in the final, who had lost to Kilkenny the previous year, so obviously they didn't want to lose two finals in a row. So it was a massive year for us. But you know, the team that, you know, Jimmy had, he mentioned there, the minor team in 95, you know, the likes of you know, Joe Dean and Donald Hogan, some of those guys had come through that team, and they won a couple of under 21s You know, I think it was 97, 98, and so they had that winning attitude, and you know, that they were used to winning and the expectation of winning. And there was a transition period, we'll say, from 96 to 98. You know, some of the older established players kind of retired, you know, even Dunlop taking over from Jock Cunningham, and you'd the Teddy Max and you know, Tomás Mulcahy is kind of retiring in that kind of 96, 97 period. So it was just transitioning to a much younger team. And I was only 26, but I was one of the older guys. I think the average age was only like 22. And I think that it was just everything kind of gelled, because you had the new guys coming in with the hunger and the belief that they could succeed. And the older guys, like myself, we were fed up of losing and fed up of the lack of success. So it kind of just gelled, and you know, things worked out for us in 99, and it was fantastic.
It all worked. You had a bit of luck against Clare. That David Ford miss, Jimmy. I'm imagining in my head the rocker Don Logue must have said something to him as he was going to hit it.
Yeah, I was on my knees watching that free. I couldn't believe he gave it away. But those things happen, in fairness to the lad. I mean, you know, you get a break some days, and that was a one for us, certainly. And at that time, I was very conscious of the fact that Clare were the best team in the country. And I felt that once we were matching them, that we had a great chance of being up at the top level. I wouldn't say we thought we'd win the All-Ireland or anything, but yeah. That was a break that day, certainly. And that was, I think, that gave the players great confidence to go to Croke Park as champions of Munster was a big factor. And it was all a building stage in the players' development. As Brian said, he himself, Mark Landers, were the older players who gave great leadership, but the younger players, was a huge age, not a huge age gap, but relative age gap in playing terms. And those lads, they were the players that Brian, you know, was obviously the big name at centre-back for us. And if Brian played well, then the whole team responded. I'm not saying that because he's there, and I've said that before, that we needed Brian almost to be man of the match in every game. And in fairness to him, during that campaign, he did. But as you said, the Clare game was a benchmark. But then we had an incredible game against Offaly and Croke Park, who were a superb side. And their skill levels were breathtaking at times. And, you know, the final itself was a different game because the conditions were horrendous. But the Offaly game was an extraordinarily good game, I thought, watching the sideline. And we just managed to pull out in the end, whereas they did the opposite to us the following year.
Yeah, exactly. So an incredible stat from that Munster final, Brian, is that you were the only player that had on that Cork team that had played in a senior Munster final. Like, it's almost unbelievable. Obviously, you were there in 92. Like, were you trying to, you know, give the lads advice, talk them through it, or were they just taking it in their stride after winning underage?
I think those guys who come through, I think they had a lot of confidence themselves. And I remember Jimmy saying to me, you know, that, you know, I had played a number of different positions kind of the previous, you know, number of years. And Jimmy had said to me that he wanted to lock me down at centre-back. And that was kind of music to my ears. And I remember Mark Landers, who was captain in 99, he'd said to me in 98, the previous year, he said, we're not going to win anything while you're playing football. You need to commit to us. That was a key decision point for me in 98. So I decided to stop playing football in 98 to fully focus on the hurling, because, you know, I felt this, you know, if we were going to beat the Clares, if we were going to beat the Kilkennys, I had to, or if I wanted to be at the level that I wanted to be, I had to focus 100% on the hurling and leave the football behind. And you know, I was playing centre back, but you know, you had, you know, you Sean O'Gahalpin and, you know, the Wayne Sherlocks and, you know, the Ben O'Connors coming on, and the Dermot O'Sullivans and the Jordines and the Donlogues, and I mean, all household names now, but you know, they had the confidence. They had won it underage, and they were hungry, and you know, you didn't have to. Wasn't the case that I was the chief motivator or anything like that. It was these guys motivated themselves, and if anything, they forced me to raise my standards.
Right, that's interesting, Jimmy. I thought maybe you were behind Brian retiring from the football, because you actually retired from football a good few years earlier than hurling, didn't you?
Well, I did. I retired 6 years before I'd heard from football. I played football from 73 until 1980. So I had a good campaign of football as well. But I didn't have anything to do with Brian not playing football. That was his own call. I didn't have any problem with him playing both games. But he just felt himself at the time. I think he mentioned to me after he'd opted out. I didn't discuss it with him at all. But he just felt himself that he wanted to concentrate on hurling with the young players coming through. And he said to me, we'll give it a right go for the next year or two. And hopefully I'll be able to raise my standards again and get back to where he wanted to be. You know, he didn't feel he had been playing. And we obviously out of position as well, but we had to build our team around him. And he made that call himself.
Right, OK. And what was Brian like in the dressing room, Jimmy? Was he vocal or was he kind of the leader on the field?
I think Brian, he said it himself there. These young players, the thing about the young players coming in, they weren't lacking in confidence at all. They were fantastic young lads. I mean, Don Logue out there were incredible leaders in their own way. And you saw that in later careers as well. These lads weren't overawed by anyone, really. But there's no doubt that, as I said, in that, saying this to patronise Brian, there's no doubt that they looked to him as our leader at that time on the field, because he was an incredible player. And, you know, players can go through their careers without winning in All-Ireland. I mean, Brian will tell you himself, you've no divine right to win one, and many great players all over the country never won in All-Ireland, and you can go in cycles and not win one. And I was saying to myself at one stage, I could be unlucky enough to be manager and Brian might not win in All-Ireland. But thankfully, the players responded to the setup we were in, and we learned an awful lot in that process. So Brian was our leader in many ways. He was very effective in a quiet way, talking to the players, especially the very young players coming in. He was a great leader to those players by his example, both on and off the field, of how he conducted his life and how he behaved on the field. And his preparation was meticulous, always an example to any one of us, even to me, who had been playing for many years with Cork, that he was able at that stage to bring a level of professionalism to his approach that I had never seen the player at that level. But again, you saw where he was the player he was. That's why he was. And it was more an example of his attitude, his behaviour, his presentation of himself, rather than being overly vocal. I don't think Brian was that kind of person. But they responded to him in many, many other ways.
Mary, we started off the show with a quote from you back in 1990. I think this was 1999, after that season when he won Player of the Year. You said, I've been watching hurling for the past 35 years or so, and I can say without hesitation, I've never seen better than Brian Corcoran. There's 20 years have passed since. Have you seen one then? Have you seen one since?
Well, there's been a couple who weren't too bad in the meantime. I'm not a great man for going into comparing different eras or players of different eras and all that. But I suppose, in fairness, Colm, the biggest tribute I can pay to Brian when he came back and won an All-Ireland playing World Cup full forward, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw him. Now, I knew he had the ability because I'd seen him playing with his club at centre half forward and all that. But I thought Intercounty would be a big ask to come back. And again, when Donal O'Grady, that lad's played him full forward, it just proved that what a great player he was, that he had that ability to change positions and be as effective again in a new role. You know, just fantastic to see it. And, absolutely tremendous, really.
Well, that was it. I was going to ask you, were you surprised when he retired, or did you see, you know, signs of it in 2000? Brian was telling me earlier that he kind of it was 2001 when he kind of got a bit cranky on the field. Maybe you finished up at that stage.
Yeah, and he was saying, I remember Brian saying to me that after 2000 against Offaly and Croke Park, he did say to me once that you should probably have substituted me. And I said, well, look, maybe I didn't think he was that bad, but Brian himself, by his own standards, didn't think he was able to have maintained what he'd done the previous year. So I'd say, I would imagine from Brian, I would imagine looking at him over that period, it was a form of burnout from 92 on, yeah, playing football and hurling, and then winning the All-Ireland in 99, and then feeling, I'd say, burnt out for a couple of years probably, and had given it everything. And, 99 was obviously a culmination of a good few years, really hard work for Brian and the players. And I think he just felt burnt out that stage, needed a break from it, which was, as it turned out, a great thing to do.
Right. Come here, one more question before we go. The 99 team is famous for having 15 bachelors. Was this a tactic of yours that they weren't getting any shit at home for going training or anything like that, or is this pure coincidence?
It was pure luck. I wish it was a great design on my part, but it was pure luck.
Jimmy, thanks very much.
It made life easier for the boys. Probably all right.
It did, Brian, I'd say.
I would say the opposite. I actually got married in 99, so...
That was after.
No, I got married in March. So I got married in March, and 6 months later, won my first All-Ireland. So I think it's the opposite for me.
Okay, I'm player of the year. Right, Jimmy, we'll let you go. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Thanks, Colm. Appreciate it. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Jimmy. Cheers.
So I got it wrong, a little bit wrong with Jimmy there, Brian, but it's fair to say that you were a hurling person that just happened to be good at football. You'd be more of a 70-30 or an 80-20, were you?
Yeah, it was probably where I grew up as well. I mean, Jimmy was with the Bars, and the Bars were senior hurling and senior football.
Yeah.
I was with Aaron Zone, and we were really a hurling club that played football. And so we trained for the hurling and we played the football as well. But the hurling team is generally the football team. We played the same positions, you know, bar one or two guys who wanted to play football. So, you know, we were junior football level, and we focused on hurling and played football. We didn't really train for football. So if we were beaten in the hurling, then we might do the odd football training session. So that's kind of how I grew up. And not saying I disliked football. I mean, I liked playing football. I just hated playing in the full back line. But in terms of, you know, I was lucky enough to win a minor under 21 All-Ireland in football. And, you know, I treasure those medals as much as any other medal I have.
Yeah. Come here. Just another question I meant to ask you about your comeback. Did you notice a big difference in professionalism when you came back into the squad? Because we obviously know about the Cork strike. You actually were very lucky. You missed all the Cork strikes in the time you came back. There wasn't any. But there had been that big one in 2002 before you came back. And that they were more player welfare issues. Did you notice a big change when you came back in?
There was a big change, yeah. It's funny because, you know, people sometimes associate me with the strikes, but I actually wasn't involved in any of the strikes. You know, I retired in 2001. They went on strike in 2002. I was back for 4, 5, and 6. So I was gone by the time they striked again in, I think it was 2008. So
yeah.
So I wasn't involved in any of that. But in terms of the professionalism, I would say there was, I mean, not saying that's in 99, you know, up to 2001, I think there wasn't a professional approach. It was still very demanding. And but I would say the science of it had changed by the time I came back. You know, Seanie McGrath was the Cork hurling coach at the time. And when I was, you know, going to be full forward, I mean, the training for me was very focused on short kind of speed bursts that I needed to do to play as a full forward. So it was like individualized training based on your position, individualized training based on your body, and, you know, based on your age, I guess. So he wasn't expecting me to be doing the same training as the 21-year-old, which I appreciated. Whereas back in the day, everybody did the same, and
yeah.
You know, whether you were injured or not, you trained. Whereas the big difference that I noticed in 2004 when I went back was you had to justify why you were able to train. So, you know, we did our resting heart rates in the morning. When we turned up for training, we had to give urine samples, checking, not for drug testing, but checking the colour of urine, checking a resting heart rate, because if there was discoloration, or if your resting heart rate had gone up what it should have been, and maybe a sign that you were coming down or you were tired. So very often you'd be told, you're not training tonight. That
right.
That was alien to me, because, you know, back in the day, you know, if you were if you had a leg hanging off you, you were still expected to train.
Yeah.
So the professionalism in terms of being more player focused and all about performance, based on the position you're playing in, that was all new to me really in 2004. But it was great, and you know, I loved being part of that.
Come here, I want to, before we get into 10 questions and finish up, Brian, I have to pull you up on a quote from your book about Waterford. So the quote is, fighting amongst themselves, relying on luck and bringing teams down to their level. You're going to have to make a very good argument to change my mind and agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of controversy about that at the time. I mean, that was not my comments. That was not my quote, number one. And I actually don't believe in it, and I don't agree with it. Where when I was writing that book in 2006, it was kind of a diary of the year, and we were, you know, we'd had a lot of very tough close matches at Waterford, and we were playing Waterford in the in 2006. I think it was the semi-final,
yeah.
2006.
Yeah.
And the night before, we had a team room, and we had a couple of mind guru guys. When I went into the team room, these posters were up in the room. Was trying to talk about the mentality that teams are going through, and our mind gurus were trying to get us. There was obviously huge competitiveness and between ourselves and Waterford at the time, and the mind gurus were trying to give us an edge, and to be honest, I didn't really buy into a lot of that mind stuff, but I put that in the book as that's what was up on the wall. Now, obviously, whatever his word is, it was taken that I had said that. I've always had the huge amount of respect for Waterford. Some of the best players I've come across have been Waterford guys. We had tremendous, tough, great, close games at Waterford, right back to the 98 league, the 99, all the way, through the, I wasn't there in 2003, but 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, and subsequently, there was always fantastic games between Cork and Waterford. So,
yeah,
that was something that kind of slipped through the net, we'll say, when the book was being written, and it was something that definitely regretted that it got in there. But it certainly, that was not a quote for me. That was up on the wall in terms of what the psychologist guys were trying to get us thinking. But I think there was comments in there about, they're depending on luck and all this kind of stuff. And that's, I never believed that. I mean, those Waterford players were great players. And it was very unfortunate that some of those players never won All-Irelands because they were better than a lot of players who did win All-Irelands.
That must have annoyed you then, getting into the book, Brian, did it? Because you sound very respectful, and like you're talking about playing cornerback, not even wanting to pull a jersey, to be able to look into your opponent's eye, or you'd feel bad about doing it. So for that to have been in your book, I know it slipped through the net, but that must have really bothered you.
It did at the time, but at the end of the day, I have to take responsibility for it because
you should have proofread the book a bit more, yeah.
Well, I did proofread it, but again, when I, as I say, I was trying to sort of give an image of what's going on in the dressing room and I'm sure Waterford were saying a lot of stuff about us, and Waterford, we kind of had the upper hand on them, so I'm sure they weren't exactly our biggest fans. And teams say different things, but the fact that it got perceived that was my view, or that's what I'd said, because as I say, I've met some of them, a lot of them since. You take the likes of Ken McGrath and Dan Shanahan, Tony Brown, these guys, Seamus Prendergast, fantastic players, Paul Flynn, we could keep naming them, and utmost of respect for them, Owen Kelly, and I never had a problem with Waterford. I always liked playing Waterford. I always had tough game with Waterford, and they had some fantastic players and players that will be remembered for years to come. So it was a regret of mine, absolutely. As I say, it wasn't my style. I'm a believer in don't say something behind someone's back that you wouldn't be willing to say it to their face. And when I was on the field, I never had issues with any of the Waterford players, utmost of respect. So that the fact that slipped through, and as I say, I have to take responsibility that it slipped through, but that was not my intent, and that was not my, what was written on that poster was not something I believed.
It would have been something that other panel members might have believed, or the sports psychologists wouldn't have just come up with it themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like you said, there was a huge rivalry there, so they might have been picking it up from somebody else. I'm not asking you who it was.
No, I don't think the players thought that. I think it was, again, people bring in these sports psychologist guys, and actually, one of the sports psychology guys actually ended up being with Waterford in the following years, and he was probably saying, changing the tune and saying the same about the opposition team. So a lot of it is, trying to find an edge, and and everybody's different. I mean, I you know, even we had players who, you know, going on the bus to the game, they were listening to words that were recorded by the psychologists, you know, to get them motivated, and other people listened to music, other people were listening to kind of you know, movie speeches and that kind of stuff. So different things worked for different people, and you know, I was more, you know, relax and enjoy the scenery on the way to the bus, because you know, for me, listening to something an hour and a half before the game, it wasn't going to make a difference on how I performed, really, an hour and a half later. So, but everybody's different, and some people need that relaxation, or those comforting words from a third party to calm the nerves or whatever. But but I don't believe anybody in the court team, you know, disrespected Waterford in any way. We knew every time we went out, we had a huge battle on our hands. I mean, you know, Cork won in 2003. They beat us in the Munster final in 2004. We beat them later on that year. They ended up being beaten by Kilkenny. We went down and won the Ireland through the back door.
Yeah.
We had huge battles with them, two battles in 2005, with battles in 2006. You know, I think there was only a point or two in those games. They were very close, and we got out with by the skin of our teeth. So there was absolutely no disrespect on Cork on my behalf in relation to playing Waterford, because every time we went in there, we knew we were going to have to perform to a very high level to get past it.
Okay, great stuff, Brian. You've cleared that up fairly well. We'll come back with 10 questions.
It's bone to lies. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after we the final, I was just through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn, and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, so the 10 questions round, Brian. Question one is, if you weren't playing for Cork, what county would you like to have played for?
Kilkenny, considering they won everything around them. Kilkenny, might have a few more Ireland.
That's a surprising answer, actually, I have to say. But okay, fair enough. You couldn't possibly pick a team in Munster, I suppose. So, okay, number two, worst ever game.
Well, if Tipperary had won 10 All-Irelands in the last whatever number of years, I would have picked Tipperary. So it's, I'm following the gold.
Question two, worst ever game.
Worst ever game. I suppose it's not great when a number come to mind. But I would say, in my own mind, All-Ireland semi-final 2000 against Offaly.
Really? And were you put back in the corner that day, was I reading? Or how were you so bad that day? Or I don't remember that game.
I started centre back, and my memory is actually started well enough. There was three or four balls came down, I caught three or four balls. But I remember going in a solo run up the field, and I struggled to get back. I just wasn't fit, and I'd had an ankle injury that summer and hadn't trained as much as I should have. And so I wasn't where I needed to be, and literally ran out of gas. And I think I might have gone a wing back and even ended up corner back, but I probably should have been taken off that day because I just wasn't fit for the full 70 minutes, and it showed.
Okay.
It was kind of embarrassing in the end.
Number three, most difficult opponent. You're allowed to give two because you're allowed to give a back and a forward.
Very hard question. I mean, I've come across so many difficult. I mean, I've never met an easy opponent, to put it that way. And I've come across some great players. One guy that you might find surprising, actually, is, you know, Christy Walsh. They set the forward for Kerry. We played Kerry a few times, and Christy was a strong really strong, physically unorthodox guy, you know, has, you know, kind of a Kitogue left-hander, but he had a hand like a shovel, and you know, we had some great battles, and you know, when we went played Kilkenny or Kerry, sorry, you kind of expected to, if for it to be an easy game and to win it comfortably in hurling, but you know, I always had kind of tough battles with Christie, so and you know, he was a player that you know, could have been more of a household name if he was playing with another county.
Very good. And when you played in the forwards, is there a defender that sticks out?
Yeah, again, I mean, I've marked some great fullbacks as well. I mean, obviously, even in training, Dermot O'Sullivan, you know, I love Mark and Sully, because you got to measure, you know, where you were. You know, obviously, the Brian Lawrence and Noel Hickey's, you know, great players, tough players, and quite a respect for all of them. And I always enjoyed going out marking those guys.
Okay, number four, if you could sign one player for Cork during your time, who would it be?
Another tough question. Again, played against a lot of fantastic players, but one player that always impressed me was Owen Kelly from Tipperary. You know, class act, great skills, great balance, did things that other players couldn't do, and scored points over his shoulder effortlessly, had speed, had everything, and really enjoyed watching him play.
Yeah, he's actually our last tribute show that we did, so that's a very good choice. Number five, favourite position, best position. This is probably the most apt question for you, because you've been everywhere.
Yeah, I've already told you my least favourite position.
we know that one.
My favourite position, I would say, centre forward. My best position, probably centre back.
Right, it's a mad that you never really played in your favourite position for Cork.
Yeah, I would say I would have loved to have done, but the managers had different opinions, and again, my view was, you know, the manager, the coach, they run the team. I'm just one of the players, and if they want to play me somewhere else, you know, I have to do what's best for the team, and that was always the way they approached it.
What about the number six? Is the hardest, dirtiest player you've marked? Now, I mean, hardest and dirtiest in the best possible way. You'll be coming off the field, black and blue.
Yeah, I mean, I to be honest, I see hard and dirty as two very different things, you know, came across a lot of hard players, and what I consider hard is guys who, you know, play the game hard. They'll hit you hard, but they'll only hit you when the ball is there. And the way I look at it is, if I had the ball, you know, I was fair game, and if someone came with a you know, trying to take me out with a tough challenge, that was part of the game. Never had a problem with that. And you know, lots of guys, you know, I mentioned Brian Lohan there, you know, tough guy, Mike Houlihan from Limerick, Ken McGrath, you know, tough players, but they played, as far as I was concerned, they played the game within the rules, and they took no mercy, but you know, they were willing to take as much as they gave. What I had no tolerance for was the guys who would be more along the lines of hitting the ball, hitting people off the ball. I had no tolerance for that. You know, I don't consider that kind of player as a hard player. To be fair, at inter-county level, I would have to say I never came across somebody, you know, who was he's interested in hitting me off the ball. To be honest, I mean, it's not something I would have kind of tolerated. I had no problem people hitting hard on the ball, but I had no tolerance for off the ball stuff. And you know, even maybe I came across guys that people might have said, "Oh, I had a tough time marking him." But I always found if you go out and you play it, you play it hard and you play it honest, and I never really had a problem with anybody.
Maybe it's because your size, nobody wanted to start it. I'm thinking of Liam Dunn and Brian O'Mara in 2001. You never would have had a lad kind of doing that with you, you know, kind of testing the hurl against your hip or your ribs or anything when you're standing there, no?
Not at not at intercounty level. I've, you know, a few guys have tried it at club level, but intercounty level, I've never had a problem. I mean, as I say, I've got hit hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it might be borderline, but the ball would be in the vicinity, and I didn't have a problem with that. It's this, the ball down the other side of the field and the fella hitting in the back of the head. That never happened to me, but I mean, obviously, maybe it's happened to other people, but that to me is not hurling. That's not meaningless. That's not tough. That's not hard. And I never did it, and nobody ever did it to me. So.
Okay, great stuff. Question number 7, best advice the manager gave you?
I mean, that lot, obviously, played for a lot of great managers over the years. Probably the best advice I would say actually goes back to when I started out, Coleman Dillon from Aaron's Own. He was kind of a, you know, everybody who came through Aaron's Own would know Coleman. And, you know, he always, you know, got me to have a strong focus on my weak side, whether it was hurling or football. You know, make sure your left side in hurling was as good as your right, and make sure your left leg was strong. Because in his view, if you were a one-sided player, you were very predictable. So, and I would have started with Coleman when I was 8. So, you know, I always wanted to have a good left side and a good left leg in football, and I thought that was important to be a more versatile player. So that was probably the best advice I've ever got.
Okay, very good. Question 8, player you most admired from another team?
Again, lots of people. I mean, because my career, you know, spans from the early 90s up to the mid 2000s. I mean, so many fantastic players, and obviously you can talk about the, you know, the Henrys and the DJs and the Plaudits that those guys get and the All Ireland that they won. But I would say I'll go back to Owen Kelly from Tip. You know, just always. Never kind of disappointed watching him, like the skill, the speed, the balance, left and right, doing things that most players can't do, you know, from in terms of an opposition player. He was somebody I greatly admired, but there was lots of players that lots of players in that, the Kilkenny team, you know, even the Tommies and the JJs and, you know, right through that era, and, you know, the Ken McGraths and the Dan Shannons and Gary Kirby's, you know, very early in my career and from and the Limerick side, and you know, so lots of fantastic players, but Owen Kelly would probably be a standout for me.
Right, okay, you were there today that Don Logan and the Rock threw him the dud ball then.
Was that Owen? I thought it was Paul Flynn.
No, Owen Kelly one year. It was a wet ball. He had a penalty. I can't remember the year. Jeez, I should remember it because I was only talking about it a couple of weeks ago. Anyways, I'll move on to number 9 here. What are the
Don Logan and Sully? They were always up to tricks with the sitters, and you know.
There were. There's no doubt. Number 9. What other manager would you like to have played under?
You know, I've been lucky enough to play under great managers like, you know, Jimmy Barry and John McCarthy and Billy Morgan on the football side. But I'd have to say, you know, Brian Cody, the most successful manager that we've seen. You know, over the years, I've only had a few kind of one-on-one conversations with Brian, but I've always, you know, liked his style, liked his approach, liked his directness, no-nonsense kind of way of doing things. And you know, back in when we beat Kilkenny in 1999, you know, he came into the dressing room after losing 2 All-Irelands in a row, and the speech he gave us and the respect he showed us and Jimmy Barry that day, you know, he went up in my estimation hugely, and I've always had great respect for him since.
Very good, very good. Question number 10, where do you keep your medals and your All-Stars and your Player of the Years and all your Cork jerseys and all your memorabilia?
I couldn't tell you where they all are right now. I have a couple of the All Stars kind of up on the mantelpiece, but the All Ireland medals are in a box somewhere. And again, to me, it's, you know, it's not necessarily about the piece of metal. It's more about the achievement and the experience of actually doing it. So, you know, my jerseys, I've given away probably a lot of the jerseys over the years, and I'm sure there's still a few up in the attic.
Yeah, so you've no jerseys on display in your house or anything like that?
No.
No, I didn't really think it was your style, Brian, somehow or another. Come here, listen, we've gone way over time, Brian. Thanks very much for doing the tribute show, and congratulations on a brilliant career. I've always been a big fan of yours, so thanks very much for doing it.
Thanks very much, Colin. Pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.